I'm the sports professor, Rick Haro, and welcome once again to Beyond the Scoreboard, the show that goes inside the trillion-dollar business of sports. Interesting concept today. We talk about all of the issues as we get to a crossroads of sports, national championship and pro football playoffs, NHL heading to the All-Star Game, NBA getting ready for its midseason break, NASCAR, golf just starting up. We have a whole host of business issues as well. Matt Higgins, who is the founder, co-founder, and CEO of RSE Ventures, company invested in various technologies, FanVision and others. Steve Ross, the other co-founder. His team eliminated from the playoffs, the Miami Dolphins, but he's into other business ventures as well as his real estate business. Interesting perspective, Beyond the Scoreboard. Talk to you in a couple of minutes. Time for the biggest issues in the world of sports this week. News, business, marketing, endorsement issues, and they're diverse and they're international. Let's start in China, on the heels of the multiple Chinese soccer clubs spending record amounts to bring international talent to the Chinese Super League. Very opinionated, very negative editorial written in the People's Daily about the trend. They say, basically, stay at home. The frenzy associated with Chinese soccer becoming an increasing concern. China's international team and the youth level, they've got to survive on their own. Oscar, Carlos Tevez, many of clubs' budgets on foreign players, over two-thirds of their entire expense. And there's a cultural divide as well, and an economic divide also. And here's my take. China seemingly focused on a couple of things, cyber superiority and maybe even soccer superiority, spending significant money to accomplish both, looking at signing players, buying teams, and developing facilities, teams in the European League as well. So we'll just have to see how it all shakes out. It's nationalism at its highest level, and that means dollars. Then we shift to Orlando. The first major, the Australian Open, is happening now. The USTA opens its brand new $60 million national campus in Orlando. And the bottom line for all you tennis players out there, tennis grows 23% to about 18 million participants in the past decade, and that's good. The USTA books more than 100 events, ranging from a conference on the business of tennis to any other events. And the take is that the viable Orlando complex may impact the location of major events like the Miami tennis event, which is at risk, but also long-term development on the East Coast and may actually cultivate young American players. How long has it been, Jim Courier, Sampras, McEnroe? We got to get some players soon, and that's the bottom line. Facilities means better players. See how that happens. Cleveland looked pretty good. They signed Edward Encarnacion, and according to Crane's Business, the team sitting at more than 10,000 full season ticket equivalents for the upcoming season. First time since 2009, the club reached that number. 150 full season equivalents, 250 new season ticket holder accounts. And by the way, since the Indians lost Game 7 to the Cubs, they've increased their season ticket number by more than 1,000. Here's my take. The Indians needed a boost after being two outs away from a World Series championship, and the direct relationship between assigning a major guy and season tickets pretty obvious here. But will it be impactful long-term? We'll have to wait and see. You sign guys, you sell tickets, and that's the bottom line. One of the other big boardroom issues this next year concerns the restructuring of the Denver Broncos, or do they need restructuring? Joe Ellis, their president, who was with the NFL for a long time, re-signs John Elway, long-term VP football operations. Obviously, Gary Kubiak retiring due to health reasons. The Broncos, a real significant brand, and their long-term legacy is at stake, especially with the shakeups among ownership, top executives, and coaches, but going to another team that's nowhere near the NFL playoffs. It is great to know the Patriots don't have a lot of these issues, but the Niners certainly do. They are scrambling to fill a key front office positions. The embarrassment of CEO Jed York trying to get out ahead of the Chip Kelly hiring and quick firing, along with general manager Trent Baalke. But a lot of the issues are specifically related to branding. Jed York says, look, I'm going to do everything I can to get this right. And a conflict with York and Baalke reached the level where somebody had to do something, and Jed York takes responsibility because he's the owner. The take is obvious. The brand of the Niners is at risk, and with Levi's Stadium entering its third year, and after the success of Super Bowl 50, time to shift to the performance of the team, league, and sponsors to see where everything is going. It's a pivotal year for the Niners. How about another international issue, which may be even more important than any others, because it involves soccer yet again, but this time 2022 and the World Cup in Qatar. The architects have talked about an 80,000-seat spectator facility named Lusail Stadium, which will host the opening match and be a recognizable landmark internationally. The bottom line, though, is that this is one of eight venues being constructed for the 2022 World Cup, including advertised air conditioning systems on the field to keep players cool. They probably can't get away with moving the entire event from the heat of summer, but they'll move it somehow. And the take is Qatar finally unveils its World Cup stadium plans. They look ambitious and astronomical, as you might expect with unlimited oil money. But the next question is even harder. Will there be a re-evaluation of the bid of 2022, given some of the skepticism that happened a few years ago? And the bottom line is, the more money spent, the more cement in the ground, the more the buildings are happening, the less likely it'll be to be re-evaluated. We go from somewhere really hot to ice. Despite rain and fog, this year's NHL Bridgestone Winter Classic was a massive success, a fitting gateway for the league's centennial season. The Blackhawks lost to the Blues 4-1. That wasn't the issue. Nearly 50,000 fans watch the game, and Gary Bettman says he expects another three in-the-elements games next season, as he calls them. Regardless of whether the NHLers participate in the 2018 Korean Games, outdoor games much more common now than they were years ago, but they still create a unique buzz in the middle of regular season hockey. And they're bigger than the sport. Results matter. A Super Bowl feel. That's kind of the takeaway. And my takeaway is that the Winter Classic morphed into a series of outdoor major celebrations. Kudos to Gary Bettman and his staff, creating a significant brand that adds excitement throughout the regular hockey season. Vegas, a positive. Phoenix and South Florida, still question marks. So the NHL has a lot to do, but they're certainly entering into their 100th year centennial season. The Bruins and the rest of the league should celebrate significant financial benefits. Final issue probably is that appears we have to go to the bathroom again. Texas unveiled a legitimate proposal from the legislature similar to North Carolina's HB2, allowing for exceptions for special events, though. Texas's bill SB6 ensures that transgender people would have to use public restrooms and locker rooms assigned to the, quote, biological sex on their birth certificate. However, the bill worded to make it possible for a private organization to determine the bathroom usage at public facilities they rent, as when the NCAA leases the Alamo Dome for the Final Four. In September, the NCAA removed all of its championship events from North Carolina, claiming HB2 was contrary to its inclusion policies. The ACC followed suit, as did the NBA, which quickly moved the 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte to New Orleans. And while Super Bowl 51 in Houston is not in jeopardy due to the sheer scale of moving the event at the last minute, other major stadium events, such as the 2017 college football season opener between Florida and Michigan at AT&T Stadium and the 2018 Men's Final Four, could be at risk despite the bill's exception clause. And my take is this. Time and again, sports has been at the forefront of influencing political policy, and Texas will be the next proving ground of ideology versus economics. And now before we get to Matt Higgins, the dot the top news story of the week ahead, but the top perspective of the week past, which is the amazing victory of the college football playoff. Well, congratulations to Clemson for an incredible 35-31 victory, but three clear winners here. First of all, television. 26 million according to the overnights, 22 million the average of the three semifinal and final games. And by the way, the semifinal finals were played New Year's Eve with blowouts, so that's a pretty significant result. Also, from a digital perspective, there were nearly 200 million minutes, 530 average viewers and well over that unique viewers. The digital advertisers will be excited about how to turn those numbers into real money. And then finally, Tampa Bay itself, a week-long activity and awareness and mention. Oh, here it is, Tampa Bay. They put on an amazing event that they haven't put on since they held the Super Bowl there. And clearly, they're a big winner with publicity you couldn't buy anywhere else. So the Bowl Championship Series guys and the playoff guys give you $6 million per conference for each team in the semis to cover expenses, and another two for the teams going to the finals. That doesn't begin to cover the excitement, Alabama as well as Clemson. From the governor on down, it's awareness you can't buy in two states that view sports as economic development. And the Bowl Coalition, the Bowl Alliance, the Bowl Championship Series, all of that stuff that started to eliminate the polls determining a national championship leads to the college football playoff. Whether it's four or eight down the road or 12, this system is clearly here to stay. Good for college football. Well, how about football as it relates to other businesses? Matt Higgins, the co-founder and CEO of RSC Ventures, a company investing in various technologies, FanVision, the content provider of NASCAR, Thuzio, a product project of former NFL running back Tiki Barber. They've also invested in the International Champions Cup in 2013, the annual summer tournament bringing together top teams, partnering with Gary Vaynerchuk to form Vayner RSE. Listing RSE Ventures, by the way, is one of the top 10 best organizations to work for in sports. Matt's also vice chairman of the Dolphins, serving as advisor to Steve Ross on his business and personal decisions. He was with the Jets. He was with CEO of Lower Manhattan Development Corporation. He was a Rudy Giuliani press guy, and he's certainly very diverse. An example of sports and business, Matt Higgins talks about technology, startup companies, the Dolphins, who now are out of the playoffs before the Patriots had a chance to do it to them again. But as we head into NFL season finales, it's good to know how owners look at other ventures to make them money as well. Here's Matt Higgins. There's no better way to describe a very unique business. You think of RSE Ventures as a spin-off of Miami Dolphins and Steve Ross, but it's much more than that. Matt Higgins, the CEO and co-founder of RSE Ventures, a company who's invested in various technologies, FanVision, Thuzio, the Drone Racing League, soccer. It's a company that Stephen Ross, who related companies, is also involved with the Miami Dolphins, and Matt have been working on together. Matt is also vice chairman of the Miami Dolphins, and he's been with the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, he ran it, COO, and one of the top 40 executives under 40 in New York in 2007, and it only gets better with time. How's that for an intro, Matt?
Well, it was fantastic. Keep going on. I was hoping you were going to go on for a bit more.
No, we're going to stop because now it's time for you to shine, now that you've been set up, okay? So we're not going to talk about elections. We're not going to talk about anything other than how to start a business that is an interesting amalgamation of different concepts. And RSE Ventures, for people that haven't known, is listed by Forbes as one of the 10 best organizations to work for in sports over the last year or two. And it started basically from scratch. Matt is the co-founder and CEO. Elevator speech on what it looks like and how you put it together.
Well, we'd like to say that we play at the intersection of sports, entertainment, and technology. Pretty much everything that we take a look at has content at its core. And we built an infrastructure that's designed to take a great idea or, you know, nascent technology with some type of content element and then use all of our resources to bring it to life. A great illustration of that is drone racing. Drone racing was something that one of members of my team had identified, and the first time he brought it up about a year and a half ago, I sort of looked at him with this, you know, quizzical smile, like, who does this? And it turns out lots of people doing it all over the world. It's just it wasn't on anybody's radar. So I like to think that when there's a great idea like drone racing that needs to come to life and you need some help, that we're perfectly formed to go ahead and do that.
So let's talk about drone racing first, and then we'll talk about how you vet all of these, because obviously the success of drone racing is a pretty good illustration. The only thing we know about drones today is that they're very important from a military perspective, and they knocked out a Cleveland Indians starting pitcher that almost cost them the berth in the World Series. But there's so much more to it, isn't there?
You know, there is. I mean, yes, I think a lot of times people have tried to invent sports from scratch and have failed. And so you always want to take the lessons from those previous examples. And one of the important lessons is the underlying activity should be organic, right? People should be doing it already. People should want to do it. And that's what was happening with drone racing, that all around the world, hobbyists were getting together, like Steam from Tron or Star Wars, and they were racing drones in parks and garages around spaces and with cameras that would enable the pilot to see into areas that you never could go to before. What I think that drone racing has is all the elements that can make a modern-day sport. It's compelling visually to watch. It appeals to youth. It appeals to lots of different people who are interested in technology or interested in racing. But what it needed was a little bit of professional backing. And, for example, the first race, first professional race ever held for drone racing was held at the Miami Dolphins Stadium. And that's the kind of support that, in the past, somebody like the CEO, Nick, would have needed a lot more experience and time to get somebody to give him a venue. And we pride ourselves on being nimble and being willing to take risks when others might want to wait a little bit longer.
So a year and a half ago, you take a look at the idea, and it's clearly sexy, but it's a little more distant. And what's the first major step? Do the numbers have to work? Do the numbers have to pass a certain threshold for you to massage them to make them work? Do you depend on the CEO to basically implement the idea in the core of all of your ventures, or are you guys hands-on to make a concept taken from idea to implementation? A lot of different questions, but it's more about process right now.
No, that's a great question, and this is a great illustration. Sometimes it's easier when you have a very speculative idea that requires lots of attenuated variables to materialize. It's almost easier to make that decision because drone racing circa 2015 in a PowerPoint defied any type of modeling. Like, there is no hockey stick possible because it doesn't even exist yet. So in some respects, then you go back to intuition and gut, which, despite all the data that you can dress up a decision, is mostly how we make our decisions, through a combination of intuition and gut supported by data. In this case, there was no data. So then I go back to basics. It's about the CEO. It's a cliche, ideas are cheap, but it's so true. So the question is, does the CEO have what it takes to bring an idea like drone racing to life? And then we ask ourselves, well, what would it take? You'd have to convince people that this is interesting and worth doing. You'd have to have the ability to conceptualize the content and make a TV-ready product. You'd have to have the humility to iterate, like, which I think is one of the key ingredients of any successful CEO, particularly an entrepreneur. Do you have the humility to pivot when your idea is not working out? So it just happens that this CEO, Nick, had all these unique attributes. He had been the CMO of Tough Mudder, so he knows what it takes to make a successful sports property. He had a background in film and production, so he's a bit of a dreamer. So he had the left brain, right brain thing going. And he had demonstrated ability to make money, combined with great resume, great education, Harvard MBA. So to answer your question, for me, I when I don't have any data and it can't be modeled, I really zero in on the qualities of the CEO. And that was much more the driving force of this investment than a prediction that drone racing would be a thing.
Thematically, you're all over the lot. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean it positively, as an entrepreneur should be. But Thuzio and Fan Vision and the International Champions Cup, a series of soccer events, it's basically changing the world's perception of what soccer ought to look like here. A lot of, A, none of this is easy. But B, are there common thematic concepts that drive the business?
Yeah, I like to think when you look at RSC from 10,000 feet, what you see below is an ecosystem. That one way or another, everything we do is mutually reinforcing. I'm willing to go somewhat far afield in what we'll look at and what we'll invest in. But what I won't do is invest or spend time on an investment or an idea that is not somehow reinforcing to the ecosystem. So you may tell me there's a nanotech investment that somebody I believe says it's going to do 10x, but I'm not going to bother with it because that means time I spend on it is not helping the portfolio overall. So the common theme is to connect the dots. Everything that we do and invest in some way benefits 2, 3, 4 other components of the portfolio. So drone racing, for example, you know, the Miami Dolphins hosted the first race, right? Well, now ESPN is carrying it, and Miami Dolphins getting all that exposure for being an innovative franchise that's willing to take risks. As a result, entrepreneurs see that and say, hey, if I have a great idea and I find that the doors are closed in sports, there's one place I know that I can have a possible shot of getting my idea a receptive audience, and that's the Dolphins. So I think the connective tissue is it's got to, in one way, help the portfolio, and it's got to be a productive use of my time so I'm not being spread in more than at least 10 directions.
Yeah, well, that
seems to be the maximum capacity.
That segues neatly into time allocation, and nobody has a lot of time on something like this. You have a little more by job definition, but you know, Stephen Ross, by the way, he runs a multi-billion-dollar real estate company, and also the Miami Dolphins with people that he also obviously hires and people report to him. So how much does Steve get involved in day-to-day vision, approval, concept? What's his role in this business?
One thing, I couldn't be here without Steve and without the flexibility of the decision-making process, the willingness to keep an open mind. People always ask me, what happened when you brought drone racing to Steve, right? Did he have any, you know, sense of the sport? And I said, well, like me, he didn't, but in about 60 seconds, he saw the opportunity. So he is very much involved. He's probably involved 5 times a granular issue that would shock you. Because it's fun and we're doing it together. So he's my partner through and through. In terms of time allocation, I ask myself every single day and probably every single hour, what is the highest and best use of my time right now? Almost I borrow from urban planning and land use, right? You always want to put land to the highest and best use of that particular piece of property. I do the same thing with my time. And that often involves where can I make the biggest impact for the biggest return?
Biggest
sometimes hour by hour.
Yeah, obviously, and it's going to change on a case by case basis. And the trick is how you allocate in the maximum efficiency and get the greatest return on it. One of the highest visibility efforts has been your world into soccer, the International Champions Cup in 2013, et cetera, et cetera. What is the future of soccer in North America, broadly defined, at 50,000 feet from your perspective?
I think soccer is ascendant, you know, master of the obvious now, right? But we are putting 100,000 people in venues, and they're getting crowds all over America in cities that might surprise you. So I think the tipping point, while it was predicted for a good 30 years, it finally has been, reached. Soccer has arrived. And with the access to content all over Europe, I just think that's only going to increase. Eventually, as a result, like the quality of MLS will continue to increase too. And I think really I think we've only begun to scratch the surface on soccer because I think the audiences are there, but the sponsorship dollars have not matured yet to fruition. So I feel like there's still a lag, but it's going to catch up pretty quickly.
And the fact that you control a large stadium and have access to a number of other significant venues will provide the resources that are available to play in the big leagues, I would argue.
Yeah, no, we're all in, right? Thanks to Steve, who had the vision to create this tournament 4 years ago, we have built a group of professionals and know how to put on matches, know how to sell tickets, know where to put teams, because that's really important. The world of soccer is filled with false assumptions about which match is going to do great where. She plays all over the world. But each time we put on a match, it's not like that particular match has history where you could be sure it's going to perform great. So a lot of what we do involves understanding where's the right place, what are the soccer markets. Not every match, for example, that you think is going to do great in Miami is going to do great. It might do better in Charlotte. So a lot of what we've done over the last 4 years is truly understanding the soccer market at a brand new level.
What's the weirdest thing that's ever been brought to RSE?
Say it again? I'm sorry, I missed you.
What's the weirdest concept that's ever been brought to you? And I'm sure you've had weird ones. I'm sure people call you on a regular basis and
require interesting investments in a whole bunch of different kind of widgets. But let me know the weirdest one, not that you've accepted, maybe, but the one that's most off the beaten track.
Oh, God, now I got to really give that some thought. There are so many different off-the-beaten. I mean, the common thread with all of them is, especially in sports, people are so passionate about it that just because they're enamored with an idea, they think it's a business. So I get a lot of those types of pitches. The moment I got to give it some thought.
Yeah, well, but the bottom line is you've answered the question because people always think that the idea that they bring to you is something that can't miss, and I'm sure would be very upset when you turn them down. And I assume in your career you've turned down a few ideas, right?
Yeah, I've turned down a few ideas, and that is always part of one of the hardest parts of the job is to turn it down. But I find entrepreneurs are equally frustrated by the inability for somebody to level with them as they are by the ultimate no. So I always feel like I'm doing somebody a service if I give them a quick no rather than passive and take a meeting for the sake of it because I don't have the energy to turn it down right away. So if I see an idea that isn't scalable, I won't take the meeting and I'll politely turn it down. If I see an idea that is predicated on getting teams or leagues to buy in, I have a real strong bias against that because let's face it, when you're dealing with an NFL team that has a pick of lots of different business opportunities, they tend to want to get really, really favorable economics. And so that's a hard strategy to go island to island and convince teams to adopt your idea. So I have a bias towards ideas that are about, you know, SaaS products that only appeal to sports teams. I'd rather much rather have an idea that appeals to the, you know, tens of millions and hundreds of millions of sports fans.
And the bottom line is you guys work really well together, and the Dolphins are an important emotional piece of this? Is there any relationship directly business-wise, or is it just you're happier when the Dolphins are winning when you go about your other business?
In an ideal world, we're out there finding ideas that we can incubate through the Dolphins in some way or another, or the Dolphins can help a company maybe in a nascent phase get more credibility or more scale. So there's instances when we're doing that. And we're always committed to trying to make the team a hotbed of innovation, particularly on the business side. So I like to think by virtue of having RSC out there taking pitches, seeing technology that we have an opportunity to invest first or to apply first. A really good example is what we've done on the content side. Thanks to Tom Gottfinkel, our CEO, we have really turned the Dolphins into a content engine. And that all started with our own in-house firm, VaynerMedia, which handles digital and social for some of the biggest brands in the country. We were able to use that team to transform the way we went about creating content of the Dolphins. And fast forward 3 years later, you know, we're producing volumes and volumes of content all day long on Snapchat, Instagram. And we really changed the way we approach the team. So it's not always so direct. It's not like we invested in an in-seat ordering company, and next thing you know, as a result of the relationship with the Dolphins, it scales. It's more the benefit of the insights and the paradigm really helps the team. On the soccer level, I think there's more of a direct benefit. By virtue of owning the ICC and being so involved in soccer, Miami is home to the best matches in the country. And last year, before the renovation, we did 5 or 6 matches. So that is a direct benefit that flows from owning RSC.
Well, the one thing that's pretty obvious is Matt Higgins has his hand full and time management, allocation, resources, how to put these deals together is top of mind. And now my final take. On Monday, even though the calendar said January 2017, the American sports world wrapped up very well what could have been the most magical sports year of all time. 2016, 4 major sports champions, 2 collegiate and 2 pro, were won by the underdog in the final seconds of the game. Witness Villanova's 3-pointer at the buzzer against North Carolina in April. To the Cavs come from behind road upset of the Warriors in May. To the Cubs' first World Series win in 108 years, and Monday nights, actually Tuesday mornings, Clemson game sealing touchdown against Alabama with 1 second left on the clock. Throw in Peyton Manning's Super Bowl victory in his last NFL quarter, and the Sparks taking the WNBA championship over the Lynx with 3.1 seconds on the clock, and you have history, magic, and a big W in the column of sports fandom that summarized 2016. But despite declining viewership numbers for linear television for that feel-good college football championship, and likewise for the NFL, Nielsen and other numbers suggest that more people are actually interested in sports than ever before. And young people, too. Just Wednesday, ESPN shared the number 178, the number of times in 2016 that a sporting event was the most viewed program on a given night among adult viewers 18 to 49. And that's almost half the nights of the year. This certainly makes sense when you consider Fox Sports' tweet from last week that there were 10,869 nationally televised sports events in 2016. Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, debating presidential candidates can be damned. And clearly, these days, sports fans have a lot more viewing choices than they did 20 years ago. Fox Sports pegs the number of events on national TV in 1996 at 3,339. But we have a lot more ways now to take in sports than linear TV or talk radio. And media experts have a lot more ways of counting the eyeballs. Nielsen data, for example, now monitors sports consumption on digital sites via mobile devices and also takes into account out-of-home viewership in bars, gyms, and other public venues. Those new ways of counting not only are winning back significant volume of impressions lost by linear TV content providers, but they're greatly influencing what the new year of sports business will bring. For the first time, companies like Twitter and Facebook are bidding for new sports media rights, and consumption numbers loom large in mega decisions coming up on Olympic sites, LA, Paris, or Budapest, and NFL franchise locations in Oakland, San Diego, LA, and Vegas. Finally, as StubHub Global Head of Communications Glenn Lehrman notes, today's mobile devices have also affected sports ticketing, and they created ticket buying spontaneity, allowing sports and entertainment fans to make spur-of-the-moment game day decisions. And this mobility and spontaneity, in turn, can allow more fans to participate in live sports at its best, like those drama-filled, spirit-raising, unifying championships we witnessed in 2016 and their next iterations waiting to thrill us in the year ahead. That's my final take. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Matt Higgins for joining us. Remember to look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, and subscribe to our iTunes feed. And once again, next week, we look at all business issues in the trillion-dollar business of sports when once again we go beyond the scoreboard.